What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drance. Of course, he covers the Canucks for The Athletic as well. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Drance, what is going on, man?
Well, I'm fired up, man. What a great game last night.
I was levitating after the game. That was so much fun. I can't remember the last time I was that pumped watching a hockey game. Honestly, it was an absolute pleasure from start to finish.
Extremely fast. It was electric. Honestly, it was just electric hockey. I mean, those teams were loaded. The amount of skill on display, the precision with which both teams were able to move the puck. Aside from Canadian goaltending, no, I'm kidding.
I got some other questions about Team Canada as well, but we can get into those later. Go ahead.
Would be nice to have Evan Bouchard.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
That's looking like an omission.
I'm not sure how I feel about the Colton Parayko and Travis Sanheim experience that we're going to get, but we'll get into that in a second here. I do want to mention Scott Niedermayer will join us at 12:30. Of course, Hockey Hall of Famer, one of the most decorated, accomplished, winningest hockey players of all time. Always a pleasure to chat with Scott Niedermayer. We'll get his thoughts on last night's game and his storied international career as well. Of course, played with Sidney Crosby at the 2010 Olympics. At 1 o'clock, Dan Rosen from NHL.com will join us. He was there on scene in Montreal last night, so we'll get his thoughts and look ahead to the Finland and USA matchup tonight as well at the Four Nations. But of course, let's start by going to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks, but of course with the Four Nations tournament this week for today, February 13th. And the headline is Four Nations faceoff opens on a perfect note. Canada beats Sweden 4-3 in overtime. And, you know, we'll talk a bit about just the whole scene in Montreal. Mitch Marner scores the winner, but really what I will remember from last night's game.
Clutch
Mitch Marner.
Mitch Marner.
I loved John.
We've always known.
I love John Cooper after the game, because someone was like, what can that goal do for Mitch Marner? He's like, well, are you implying he needs a confidence boost? He's like, no, he's just a big-time player making a big-time play. But what I'll remember from that game, that was Sidney Crosby's night in Montreal, right? The ovation in the introductions, the chants in the introductions. Immediately an incredible pass to Nathan MacKinnon to open the scoring in the first minute. Great play, like vintage Crosby, core strength, holding off Gustav Forsling to set up Mark Stone, and then a really brilliant cerebral pass in overtime to set up Mitch Marner's winner, and then the ovation, the player of the game, and the chance for him after. Just like we got to watch Sidney Crosby play for Team Canada last night, and he was a beast, and it's been way too long, and it was absolutely everything you could have hoped for.
The 26-0 stat, like, what an unbelievable run that is.
Oh, it's incredible.
One of the great winners in hockey history, one of the great winners in Canadian sports history, a legend, and his legend grew last night. You know, the Nick Foligno patented net front pass, right? I mean, usually a power play requires Sidney Crosby on the flanks directing traffic. The idea that you could stick Sidney Crosby in the net front to receive a pass from Connor McDavid and send, you know, a pass to MacKinnon on his one-timer side. I mean, come on, let's go. Honestly, there's a lot of people who need to be tipped for that goal. Like, Crosby definitely should tip Foligno for stealing that trademark play and executing it better, frankly, than Foligno did all those years in Columbus. And then the NHL itself needs to tip William Nylander
for taking the high sticking penalty.
Yeah, the early high sticking penalty gets them the SportsCenter highlight, the McDavid to Crosby to McKinnon. Yep. You know, that now that's going to be like, as like the Doc Emmerich voice comes in, you know, to set up the stakes on Saturday, it's going to be like McDavid to Crosby to McKinnon, right? And it's going to be like building up the hype of the like Imperial Canadian team facing these plucky American underdogs, although it's, of course, anything but. You know, I this is such a win for the league. And then I loved 10-minute 3-on-3.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That was great.
Yeah.
I loved just the speed of the game. I loved the Braden Point line. I thought, as much as it was Crosby's night, I thought Connor McDavid playing at that level of competition, it's fun to watch because it really does reemphasize just the level that he's hit at this point in his career. You know, once Mitch Marner figures out how to recycle pucks for him, because I think there were some chemistry kinks just from that line. But still, the way that McDavid's just able to move out there, even against that blue line group, who played really well and really physically, well, I mean, what can't this guy do? He might have hit a level where anytime you lose a game with Connor McDavid on your team, you got unlucky.
He was really good last night. Just the speed he was playing at, it was incredible. And as you said, maybe some chemistry issues to figure out with Reinhardt and Marner. We'll see how John Cooper tweaks things, if he does tweaks things, or if he just keeps them together going in to Saturday's game. And, you know, big picture coming out of last night, I'm not going to do the back padding thing too much here for being one of the people, and you were as well. We were both on record as being very, very excited about this tournament and the level of play.
Yeah, we were pro Four Nations facing off.
Yeah, before it was cool. Now it's cool. Now everyone's on it. But anyways, I'm not going to try to, like, you know, dunk on people who are against it or whatever. But I was thinking about because I was thinking about it a lot.
Live
right?
A little.
Because even
this is Canucks
this,
talk.
This is, I was going to say, this is the difference between me and you. Because last night before the game, right?
No, it's not.
The NHL and the PA and the PA announced the World Cup for 2028. And I'm like, yes, let's go. And at least eight teams. And they want to do this every 2 years in February. And I'm fired up.
And go to Europe.
Yeah. And even in the comments and social media, a lot of people are like, oh, rolling their eyes at it. And I do wonder how much. And that was before the game, right? And I think now probably people have a lot of a different opinion. I do wonder just how much of the apathy for this or the skepticism was just the sheer amount of time that has lapsed since we'd actually seen it. Like, I think there's a real element of people forgetting just how good international hockey is, forgetting what it's like to watch Sidney Crosby play for Canada. You know, you mentioned the speed of the game. What, like, one of the old sayings in hockey, right? You can't give a great player a bad pass because they're just a vacuum. They control it no matter where it is. How many times did you see that adage play out last night? Like, the level of puck control is just at a completely different level than what you see even in the NHL with how talented those guys are. And I really think people just kind of forgot, as weird as it sounds, like, oh yeah, international hockey is a phenomenal, phenomenal product. And man, I think we all got a reminder of that last night. And the fact that if it pans out, and I got some questions about the World Cup plan and all that that we can maybe get into, but if it pans out, we do have, you know, every 2 years in February, and sometimes it's going to Europe and they're real tournaments with eight teams and all that, like, that is a big, big positive deal for the sport going forward.
It rocks. I mean, think about, like, on the fourth line for Sweden, who are the overmatched team, you know, like a plus 200 dog. You have Elias Lindholm as the fourth line center. You have Gustav Nyquist, a guy who scored 75 points last season. And I can't remember the other guy, but the, you know, another first line caliber player, you know, Travis Konecny leads the Flyers in scoring by roughly the same margin that Quinn Hughes leads the Canucks in scoring.
He's on pace for like 90 points.
It's a little different to do it as a winger than a defenseman, but there's a reason that we're talking about Quinn Hughes as our trophy candidate. The point is like, Travis Konecny isn't just a top line player. He's head and shoulders above the next closest player on his team. He's an elite, elite player. He's a fourth line winger on this team. And then, let's be real, he's playing with Cirelli, a perennial Selke nominee, and Hagel, who's like an 80-point guy, and you can still feel the gap in juice between that line's minutes and what McDavid and MacKinnon and Crosby are doing. And it's just like, that's the point. That's the point. You know, the idea that you, you know, challenge these guys, put them in the highest level competition possible, and they still stand out. You almost need that contrast. You need to see it to actually understand how great Crosby is, how great McDavid is, how great MacKinnon is. We know all of this, but there's like a texture that gets added to it in an environment like that. And man, I have been thirsty for it. I'm not afraid to admit it.
No, why would you be? I mean, it's the best. It's simply amazing. And then everything about it last night, the intensity, the crowd, the atmosphere, all of it, the greatness on display from the players, as you said, like outlining Travis Konecny, he played 10 minutes. He played 10 minutes last night, right? And like that's because John Cooper, as you said, knows there's a big gap between him and the top players on Team Canada. Like these coaches had to manage minutes to kind of shelter the quote unquote bottom of their rosters, who also happen to be like all-star caliber players at the NHL level. So pretty incredible from that perspective. Some other takeaways from the game. I mean, let's talk about Jordan Binnington, I guess, because this question came in from Ian and Coquitlam. Any concerns with the goaltending? I thought Binnington, as expected, was so-so. Says once the goals started to go in, I felt Canada got a little cautious and backed off a bit. I wonder if we see Hill in game two. I think it was kind of what, like, Jesse Granger was on the show earlier in the week and said, you know, with Binnington not as reliable on the kind of predictable stuff as Aiden Hill, but he has that athleticism and the ability to make the big save. I mean, that played out,
yeah,
right?
A
couple where he was square and he probably should have stopped it, but then made some really excellent saves as well. And I think he did enough, I think, late and in overtime to get the start on Saturday. You don't think so? You think they're going to Hill?
I thought so. I thought so on that one explosive cross-crease push, but then you see the highlight and it was flubbed. It wasn't the shooter didn't raise the puck. That was the Zibanejad chance. So, no, I don't know. I would try someone else personally, but you know, I'm deeply fearful about this 25% tariff being applied to Canadian save percentage in this tournament, without question.
Yeah, it's going to be a story, that's for sure. And as I was saying as well, you know,
no doubt,
I got some questions on the blue line too. Shea Theodore leaves the game. Really unfortunate for him. Obviously a local guy.
Huge L.
That sucks. It's tough for Team Canada, but it sucks for him personally as well to get that opportunity and have it be so brief. But you know, I mean, I wasn't crazy about Colton Parayko's game. I wasn't crazy about Drew Doughty's game either. And now all of a sudden, you know, with Travis Sanheim
Josh
coming
Morrissey.
In. Yeah, Morrissey I have a little more confidence in because I didn't think he played great. Yeah, he can skate. He can move the puck. So it's not as much of a like, concern spot for me. I'm fine with Josh Morrissey. But the combination of Parayko, Sanheim, and Doughty, who I thought looked slow, and understandably so, I mean, he hasn't played a lot of hockey recently, like that starts to get a little nervous for me against Team USA on Saturday.
Yeah, I just wish they'd brought Bouchard so that you could have built a five-man unit and just like deployed him as the heavy artillery with McDavid. I mean, why would we go away from something that works so well in the NHL, even if you are sheltering Bouchard's minutes? You know, I honestly too think this was our first game watching the John Cooper version of Team Canada, and I liked it a lot. Like, I thought the choices that were made played out pretty well. I mean, this is a guy who had a pretty good sense of how he wanted his team to play. You know, in terms of, I thought the third line was maybe Canada's best 5-on-5. Like that Marchand point, just kind of buzzing about
Jarvis,
buzzsaw line. Let's go. Yeah, exactly. Just like taking up space. They score the rush goal, punishing a mistake. Like it couldn't have played out better. You know, I think as Reinhardt, Marner, and McDavid build familiarity, I think they're going to be the best line at this tournament. And then Crosby, obviously, with Stone and MacKinnon, and you've got MacKinnon's speed, and he's sort of free to freelance and just take it himself, but he's playing with two of like the great puck battle winners in the NHL, so it's just recycle the puck for Nate, and then have Crosby break some have some game-breaking moments. Perfect, right? Like there were some really sharp choices made I think, up and down the lineup. Even that fourth line, you know, where Cirelli and Hagel were huge factors, was on the penalty kill. I mean, one trademark of Cooper's is the 7D and sort of double shift your best forwards with your fourth liners. I mean, if you're bringing Cirelli and Hagel as a like identity fourth line and penalty killers, I mean, you know, and you bring Bouchard to just deploy him with McDavid, I would have loved to see that. I don't know why. I almost worry that they like hat tipped to a previous identity of the Canadian national team, as opposed to having Cooper fully enunciate his vision for this team, which I feel like would have included that. So I think you're right. But about sort of the play of Doughty and Parayko in particular. And I mean, it does sound from the reports like Canada's working to address the Theodore absence, despite the rules stating that you basically need like emergency conditions in order to call up a guy. There must be a Canadian guy on vacation who's just like, guys, can you tell me, like, should I fly to Montreal or not?
So the latest word was if they're allowed to put people on notice now. So, like, your Chris Tanevs, your Thomas Harley was brought up by Friedman. You would presume Bruce Bouchard figures in at some point here, but Uyghur, you're allowed to kind of put guys on notice and be like, hey, make plans. Like, figure out the fastest way to get from Cancun to Boston or whatever. Because if they lose another defenseman, then I think they're allowed to add. Rather than forcing them to go with five guys, they would be allowed to add at that point. That seems like it's an informal thing. I mean, it's the NHL, so the NHL can just like change the rules if they want. There's no governing body which is going to like bring the hammer down.
That's
on
what I'm
them.
Saying.
They can just do whatever. So they're basically like, look, those are the rules, but if it's that or make you play like the final game with five defensemen, we're not going to do that. So you can make preparations to bring somebody in place of Shea Theodore. We'll see how that goes. Quickly, we should mention here in the headlines, although we got to whip through some stuff. Elias Pettersson fails to make an impact, I would say, is the way I would describe it for Team Sweden. Basically plays third line minutes. And it wasn't like a catastrophic performance or anything like that, but it just felt like a lot of the nights we've seen with the Canucks for Elias Pettersson, where it's like there's no play that you can point to and he's killing them, but he's not making an impact either.
Yeah, I want to talk more about this, obviously, as the show goes along. A couple notable data points. You know, I thought the burst, we saw it show up in the first period against Toronto, but I think we've seen it for 20 minutes across the last, 500 minutes that he's logged on an ice sheet. Those first two steps looked a little bit juiceless. Had a couple opportunities to make plays that would have come up large for Sweden and obviously couldn't quite pull them off.
Mm-hmm.
The one-timer in overtime stands out and the two-on-one, of course, although his teammates didn't help him, especially on that. But nonetheless, I mean, Pettersson at his peak, you know, just like stops up and shoots or figures out a way to manufacture an opportunity out of that play. You know, the thing that I think, again, we get this relief or this texture in terms of judging the absolute best of the best players in this environment. And one thing that I think is telling or worth paying attention to from that Pettersson performance is that he wasn't out of place, even at this diminished form, at that level of hockey. Right? Like, I didn't think he played like a liability for Sweden. And in fact, I'd say like the Zibanejad line had a far tougher night in terms of being manipulated or exploited by the Canadian team than Pettersson did. I thought positionally sound, blah, blah, blah. Like, he could hold up at that dizzying pace. And that's telling, right? Because I think that tells you a lot about where his game is at, right? He's still capable of logging top of the lineup minutes for you and producing, you know, 55 to 60 points like we've seen this season, but he's not going to be the reason you go out and win games because he just doesn't have that next level of offensive juice. And so in some ways it felt like, yes, you're right, a performance that felt familiar for Canucks fans, but also one that I felt like, you know, actually told us a lot about sort of the state of the game or his game and sort of the levels to this. Right, he's not performing like a superstar generally, but there is still value in what he's bringing, and that's worth trying to like sort of weight accurately and see clearly, as opposed to simply being annoyed that he's not able to tap into that game-breaking juice that has tended to define his game for most of his career.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of putting it ultimately. If you were expecting kind of see that juice come back in this tournament, at least through one game, not the case so far with Elias Pettersson. USA, Finland tonight in Montreal.
Oh,
Hellebuyck versus I'm really excited.
Is it 5 p.m. yet?
No, I know. I'm excited to be an honorary Finnish citizen tonight and cheer for Team Finland against Team USA.
Hey, I'm telling you right now. Very few more rewarding experiences in life than rooting for Sasha Barkov.
Oh, it's going to be great.
Go.
I'm very, very excited to do so tonight against Team USA in
Barkov.
Montreal. What are they? The Suomi? Is that how you say it?
Suomi.
Yeah, the Suomi. Yep. Go Suomi. Let's go.
Yeah.
I do want to talk more about
if they beat the Americans.
Oh.
Then we say Kitos.
It's going to be incredible. What's that? Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you. There you go. Thank you. Kitos. Finish lessons with Tom Strands. I do want to talk more about the best on best calendar going forward, because I think great announcement, but also some open questions about how exactly it's going to play out. But we can do that later on in the show. So just to run through some lineup notes, as mentioned, Shea Theodore is out for the tournament. If another defenseman is injured, Canada could name a replacement. But we'll see.
Sorry, obviously sucks.
Yeah,
to lose Shea Theodore from Team Canada's perspective, and as a Vancouver show, you know, given his local roots, I do want to say, like, one thing we didn't get to see, you know, Shea Theodore can play the right side. So if the ability to sort of skate and move on the right side is something that you saw as a weak point, like, Shea Theodore hurts you there too, even if that wasn't where he was taking line rushes or starting the game, it's still an adjustment that Canucks coaches couldn't pull out of their, Team Canada coaches couldn't pull out of their pocket. I was literally thinking about Rick Tocchet in that moment. So, but I also want to shout out Devon Taves, who very, very quietly might have been Canada's most impactful 5-on-5 player last night. You know, even in that level of competition, he had that entire game on a string. And the difference for Canada in Taves' minutes and without him was through the roof.
He's really good. He's really good. And man, they're going to rely on those two a lot going forward for the rest of the tournament. Cale Makar and
Devon
Taves.
He's literally Zavi, man.
Yeah, he's pretty great.
It's insane.
We'll see if the other big question going in, well, one, Travis Sanheim will come in. Do they mix up the pairs at all, or do they just straight place him next to Drew Doughty in place of Shea Theodore? And then the other question, it seems to be almost an assumption that Sam Bennett will draw into the lineup to kind of counteract the agitators and Matthew Tkachuk and Brady Tkachuk on the other side. So we'll see if that does play out. And also, I guess the question is, who comes out for Sam Bennett to come in? So those are some lineup questions for Team Canada to keep an eye on going into Saturday's game. And, you know, quickly, we're monitoring Dom's model for the Four Nations tournament as well here. So 2 points for Canada instead of three, as it would have been for a regulation win.
The NHL. Wow. So you guys understand this,
like,
as a concept.
You do know how
Unreal.
It works.
Wow.
I love
shocking.
It. We'll give you the smart stuff, like 10-minute overtime and the 3-point system. We'll get just a little dose of it, a little treat of it here in February, but then we're going back to the other way. But anyways, they get 2 points. Sweden gets one. So really not a lot of change to the odds per Dom's model. Canada bumps up slightly to 41%. Sweden dips a little bit to 14%. But because they split the points, no real earth-shaking change in what Dom's model expects to see play out at this tournament. All right, there's your whiteboard for today. As mentioned, Scott Niedermeyer on the other side, excited to get his thoughts on what he saw from the game last night and some of his memories of playing with Sidney Crosby at the 2010 Olympics as well. That's next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.